All right, we're here with Senator Arlen Meekhoff this morning, and good morning, Arlen.
Good morning, Juke and listeners. Great to be here again.
Well, we have the we had the State of the State. Now we got the budget message, and what's your take on the budget message?
Well, I think we should back up just a moment and remember the perspective of 3 years ago. We were $1.8 billion in the hole.
Right.
We had enough money in our savings account to run state government for about 30 minutes if something should happen. And everybody was crying, oh, woe is me, and the bumper stickers were being printed, the last one out of Michigan, please turn out the lights. And in 3 years, we've now had, this will be the fourth consecutive year with a budget that's going to be presented that's balanced, it's on time, it's fiscally sound, and it invests in priorities, and it does do some things to pay down some of the debt that we've incurred. So let's talk about that in perspective, but I wanted to talk about the West Michigan economy and Michigan economy first in general. And it's being recognized by Wall Street Journal and other places that as the state that has come out of the recession, if indeed we're out of the recession, has come out of the recession in the best shape and done the best things financially. Unemployment was 11.3%, now it's 8.4%. That's the largest drop in any state, the largest drop in unemployment. Now, we've still got a ways to go.
A call here?
Oh, we got a call. Great.
Yeah. Good morning. You're online with the senator.
Oh, excuse me. I listen on the internet and there's a delay, so I apologize. I will hang up. Thank you.
Thank you. All right.
So the Michigan economy has added about 220,000 private sector jobs. That is alone one of the highest ones around. And I think most importantly, people thought that right to work was going to decimate unions and it would wipe them out. They've added 3,000 jobs. Okay, so it's not like right to work was the thing that was going to kill unions. They do a pretty good job to themselves if they haven't been responsible and responsive to their members. So again, three consecutive years, very strict fiscal discipline. The fourth year, this is some fiscal responsibility, paying down the debt. It was about $50 billion. Now it's about $30 billion. And again, these are commitments that have been made in the past, a long time ago, that we have obligations to which we need to pay in the future. So it's very much like a mortgage or not so much like credit card anymore. I used that analogy before. But let's keep some of these things in perspective. The state budget's about $50 billion, and with the governor's proposal, a little bit more than that. And inside of that, people are saying there's $1 billion, there's $700 million, and I think Representative Hobman could state the numbers a little bit better. But part of that is speculative, going into 2015, what the economy is going to do, and based on what we think our expenses are going to be, that they're assuming there's $1 billion somewhere over 3 years. Well, let's back that up and just say it's $700 million in real money. The rest is potential.
Yeah.
So let's take $50 billion, and then if somebody out there in radio land would just write down $50 billion, if you write the number out and you cancel out a bunch of zeros at the end and just make it look like 50,000, and then you take $700 million and write that out and cancel a bunch of the numbers off there, it looks like 700. So if you were a family that made $50,000, then you went through and you paid your car payment, paid your mortgage, you invested in your 401k, you did all your living expenses, you actually got about $700. Okay, that's a perspective of which I want people to understand. Yeah, a billion or $700 million is a lot of money, but in just perspective, $50,000 income of a family, you've got about $700.
Right.
So now figure out what it is you're going to do. And by the way, you still got $30,000 of debt out there that you have to service, and you got your cars aren't doing so well, the roads are crumbling, other things around you. So inside of that, we have to figure out what is the best way to invest that. A number of people say, well, it's time for a tax cut, and that may be true as well, but we also have obligations to which other people have obligated us, and we have to work on a lot of those things. So that's just kind of a big picture perspective of where the governor's budget is. Very rarely does anybody challenge him on numbers. He's a CPA. He knows exactly what he's talking about.
I think we have an obligation to the infrastructure of roads.
Yeah, and I think the governor is, again, we don't have a long-term solution. I mean, there's been some proposed, but we don't have a long-term solution yet. And I'm hoping that we work towards that. And I've said many times in this program, the formula which we use just simply can't support what we're doing. It's based on per gallons, and we're using less and less gallons. And
right.
So we have, and then we have other demands on the roads. We have cars that don't pay any gas tax because they're electric or battery operated. So how are we going to fairly pay for the infrastructure, which we've already invested a lot of money?
So people maybe should pay a premium when they buy a car like that?
There's plenty of ideas. I've heard from some of my colleagues in other states, they're talking about taxing tires, doing just other things that would contribute towards the road. I don't know exactly what the answer is, but everybody benefits from roads. The person that travels on the roads for to be a salesman, the truck driver that delivers the goods to anybody who is maybe even a stationary place or a nursing, everybody benefits from the road. So how are we going to pay for it, given the fact that our structure doesn't support even the current maintenance for what we need to do?
Good morning. You're online with the senator.
Yes. I'd like to talk for a minute about not knowing who's putting the ads on television. I'm really worried about this because of the hate groups that we have and the militia groups that we have, foreign interest and money and terrorists. And we know that it could happen here. It has happened in other states. And I'm just worried that people behind this money, if we don't know who they are, they could be deadly to our government and get people in who are sympathetic to their cause. And I was wondering what we can do now that we can't check up on that to be aware of this.
Well, first, you're asking what we can do. It's already illegal to disclose people's donations to any kind of group. Okay? Yeah. They're in support of something, say Right to Life or NRA or anything like that. You have been
protected. That's the problem. We it's illegal to disclose it, and we need to know who those people are.
That's part of your freedoms as well, because you have the freedom to donate to somebody who wants to support your cause, or you want to support their cause, and your names aren't disclosed for fear of being harassed. So that goes both ways. It just doesn't go one way.
I know, but in this time, this is dangerous. At least to me, it's really scary, because I know there's a lot of foreign money out there, and there's a lot of bad people. And I'm not just talking about Republicans and Democrats and how you feel about abortion or whatever. I'm talking about the really bad people that hate this country but are living here and doing something about it.
Mm-hmm. All right, I appreciate your opinion. I don't see where we're going to stop that. I mean, we also have to be free to express our opinions in the way that we want to express them. So if they're going to use our freedoms against us, I guess they do now. We just have to be more vigilant.
And how can you be vigilant if you
don't? Pay attention. Pay attention.
Yeah, well, that doesn't always work, unfortunately, because we can't find out who they are because it's illegal.
Okay, we got another call here. Thank you.
Okay.
Good morning. You're online with the senator.
Good morning, Duke. Good morning, Senator.
Good morning.
Picking up where that last caller came from, I'm not sure whether she's aware, as many people are, that the biggest danger we have in this country right at the moment is Barack Hussein Obama and him changing laws anytime he wants to. We have Eric Holder up at the top in the Justice Department deciding to change laws anytime he wants to. Whether they're going to enforce the laws that are already in place, it's absolutely ridiculous. The people of this country have to wake up and see what is happening.
Well, okay. my point to you would be, and to everybody out there, elections have consequences.
Yes, indeed they do, and many people, I don't think, were paying too much attention in 2008. They certainly were not paying attention in 2012. Many, many people predicted exactly what is going to happen and what is going to continue to happen in this country. All you have to do is pay attention to see what they're doing, and they're driving this country right into the ground, and that's part of Mr. Obama's plan, because he's a follower of Saul Alinsky, Bill Ayers, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and the whole purpose of many of their programs, most of their programs, is to tear everything down. Wreck it so that they can build whatever they want to on the ruins of what was left and turn it into the society and country that they believe that they want it to be, which is mostly absolute socialism. It's been tried before all around the world. It has failed. what their feeling is all the time is, well, they just didn't do it the right way. We're going to do it the right way. This country is going to wind up in ruin in the next 3-4 years if we keep on going and if we elect who what everybody says we're going to elect for another 4 years in 2016. It's just absolutely unfortunate. I'm glad I'm an older person. I'm going to have to live with this stuff for, you know, 10, 15, 20 years, yeah, more years at the most, and I'll be gone. But I feel very, very sorry for the younger people. I see a young person out there walking down the street these days, and I go, I sure feel sorry for you, because you don't even know yet what's going to come up and hit you right upside the head.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. Have a great day.
Well, there was a caller there, and they went away, evidently.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, unfortunately, many of our leaders at the top do not believe in American exceptionalism, the fact that America is exceptional because of the individuality that we have, the great people that we have, and,
right,
and those folks don't, apparently by their policies and by their actions, they don't believe that America is exceptional, and I do. I think we are exceptional, and we don't take anybody's property. We don't do anything like that. When we fight wars and when we defend liberty around the world, the only space we ask for is a place to bury our dead.
Good morning. You're online with the senator.
Yeah, you know, that one lady made a real important point there. I mean, we've got so much money coming into the Democrat National Committee from the Muslim Brotherhood and from Al-Qaeda even, Palestinian groups. And a lot of this is George Soros money, and it's getting funneled into 501c3 and 501c4 groups that the IRS has allowed to operate, while at the same time the operation of, or the actually the, I don't want what you call it, the renewing of some of these, or even granting 501c3s and 501c4s to groups that tend to have names like the Patriot, America, you know, Constitution in their titles. But it brings up another question I wanted to ask you, and that is on a state level here. Over in Dearborn, we have Sharia law, and it's not just creeping in, it's coming down like a tidal wave. What are you hearing about Sharia law being invoked and, you know, Christian sentiments being thrown in the trash dumpster in Dearborn?
Well, first of all, if we have judges, we have judges that are using Sharia law, anything besides U.S. law and the U.S. Constitution, there is a process by which you can go after that. It's called impeaching a judge. That would be a dereliction of his duty because they swear an oath to the Constitution just as I do when I take office. So if that indeed is what's happening, if Sharia law is being invoked and given as a reason for defending or doing something, my personal opinion, that judge should be impeached. That's the way we attack this thing because, again, if they've taken an oath, they have to uphold the oath. If they're not going to uphold the oath of office, we need to put somebody else in there.
All right, thanks.
Thank you. And I believe we're going to let the call in here. Good morning. You're online with our senator.
Yeah, is this WHTC?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, sir.
This is Stacy Jackson. I was calling to see if I could catch Dan. I had a question for him.
Oh, you'll have to call the office number, 392-3121.
3121. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And let's take a moment out for a word. We'll be right back.
Hi, I can promise your family, hometown, heartfelt service that exceeds your expectations, not your budget. It's a promise we've kept for over 100 years.
All right, we're here with Senator Arlen Meekhoff this morning, and if you have a question for him, 395-1450. And what else you got there, Arlen?
Well, in the governor's budget as well, going back to that, schools and education is one of the larger expenses that we have. It consumes about, of that $50 billion I was talking about $13 billion. Some would say just a slight bit more. There is a per pupil funding increase there, and it's based on a formula that we did under Proposal A. It's called 2X. Some of the lower-funded schools will get twice as much as the higher-funded ones to help close that gap. It's taken a long time, but we're making effort on it and got a good start on it. I think what most people realize and what people want to say is if there's been, they say, is a cut to schools. There's no cut. We've been putting more money in, and the only time there was a cut is when the federal era money went away, and the governor is very good about pointing that out. But what most people don't realize is when we give the money back to the schools, there's a huge retirement cost that has been agreed to by others in the past, and we have helped cap that expense to the school. And so we're putting $700 or $800 million into that fund to make sure it's whole, because otherwise schools would have had to give back to retirement fund about 33 cents of every dollar that we gave them. Now we capped that at 27%. So that's just a huge cost to schools. And people say, well, that's really not going to pupil cost, but it is part of the cost of educating children, right, what folks have agreed to in retirement benefits. So we have some opportunity there. That will continue for several years more before it begins to decline, some of the reforms we've made. And in 2017, 2018, we're hoping that cost curve starts bending the other way. And that, like Dave Ramsey would say, as you pay down your debts, your cash snowball gets bigger and you have more opportunity to do things. So that's what we're hoping to do.
Good morning. You're online with the senator.
Hi. I think the one guy kind of got it wrong a little bit when he was talking about the money going into the Democratic campaigns and so forth under names like Liberty Today and all that sort of thing. That's both parties. And why did our Republican governor sign a law that permits more money to be given under these generic names without people saying who they are and what they believe in? I don't think that it's a Democratic thing at all. I think it's both parties, and maybe more so Republican. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I would disagree with that. And first of all, the governor signed a law that actually upholds what the Supreme Court has already ruled on free speech and money in this instance. So it is what the Supreme Court has said and understands it to be. They've equated money in this instance to free speech. Now, you can agree or disagree with it, but that is what is ruled at this point. So it isn't Democrat or Republican. It's free speech, and it's protected for everybody, even if you don't agree with the free speech.
Good morning. You're online with the senator.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
Senator, I think last time you were on, I talked to you, and I had a question about Common Core. And you said you were going to look into it, and I don't remember if you said you were against it, but most people are against it, and I knew that if the governor did sign on to it, there was money promised there, you know, for education, you know, and it's a big disappointment that the governor even, you know, was even thinking about signing into it. Last I knew that, I might have misheard, but I thought Michigan, state of Michigan did sign on to Common Core. Can you give more details about that?
Sure. And your comment about most people are against it is not true. When I listen to my school boards, when I sit down with them, my most conservative school boards, Hudsonville, some of the charter schools and other people, they have looked at this as a competitive advantage. They look at it and say, you know what, there's some disciplines in here that we're going to be able to do well, and our children are going to be that much more educated on critical thinking skills, and they believe that's going to be the best for the kids. And those are school boards where Tea Party folks are on the board, where business people are on the board, and they unanimously have supported this idea of how to do that. So,
you're for Common Core, correct?
That is correct.
Yeah, okay. I don't believe in Common Core. It's an invasion of privacy, and you know, giving up your self-right for it, for something.
Well, I would think that those folks that are on school boards who are publicly elected by parents would also have looked at that, and they unanimously have supported it because they believe it is the right tool to educate our kids.
Well, I don't know. I think it starts with the teachers. I know that, obviously, but to get government into it, you know, and once you involve government, it's government property now, you know.
I think you seriously misunderstood this, because Common Core is a set of values or a set of things that people aspire to. The curriculum is still directed by the curriculum folks at the school where your kids go, your grandkids or whomever you have at those schools. Those local school boards with parents' input believe that this is the right thing to do, and I listen to them because they are in my communities. Public schools have done a very, very good job. Charter schools have done a very, very good job. Parochial schools where my children went to school unanimously accepted this, so I understand it to be of benefit.
Now, is this, well, if you're telling me that much, then, you know, how much is the state of Michigan getting, you know, for education of government-funded money, which is our tax dollars?
I'm missing your point. What are we gaining in tax dollars?
No, I think it's under government for Common Core, Michigan signed, the state of Michigan signs on like all the other states were doing. They were promised, you know, money for education from the government.
It's not any more money than we were getting before. It's your money still returning to the state of Michigan.
I tend to disagree with you on a lot of those issues, but we don't have time for that. But I appreciate your response. Thanks.
All right, thank you. And we got to take time out here for some weather and Holland's Hometown Forecast brought to you by Hop In and Downtown Fenville. Text HOP to 80373 for pizza and grinder specials. And it's snow showers today up to 2 inches, steady to slowly falling temperatures from the mid-teens. Mostly cloudy tonight with a low of 6, and a mix of sun and clouds tomorrow with a high of 17. Right now we are at 17 degrees. And good morning, you're online with the Senator.
Yes, as far as Common Core is concerned, I understand the Senator seems to think it's a great thing because school boards agree with it. There's a whole lot of citizens out here that don't agree with it that the Senator doesn't choose to listen to. He'd rather listen to a handful of elected officials, and I say Common Core is going to be a very bad thing for this country, this state, for any students. I thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, I would simply disagree again. When National Heritage Academies buys onto this, the very first thing, because they see it as a competitive advantage for the students that they instruct, I would think that's a big deal. That's somebody, you know, it's not a for-profit school, but it's somebody that says, look, this is something we can use to draw students and our students to perform. So I think you got to put a lot of weight behind that to understand that it's good. And I think it's going to be a benefit to us. And, again, what we've been doing hasn't been very well accepted. I mean, there in lots of parts of the state, we're not doing very well. Again, our public schools are doing a great job here. They know how to make copper wire out of pennies, and they are figuring out how to get our kids skilled in critical thinking skills and be able to be ready for the real world.
Okay, got another call. Good morning, online. Oh, I guess not. Okay. All right, we're here with the Senator. We've got just a few minutes left.
Well, a couple things have been going on in Michigan because of all the snow that we've had, and somebody made a joke this morning, hey, look outside, it's snowing. You don't see that very often. Oh, wait, I guess you see it every day. But it's caused a number of different things. There's an LP shortage in Michigan. There's
right.
A fair amount of people in your listening area here that still heat by LP, and there's been some, I'm told, some restrictions on how much volume people are going to be getting out. The price is going up. And the other part that's really, I think, been the most noticeable is snow plowing the roads. I mean, a county commission and a number of other agencies are really hurting now for the amount of money that they
had
put up for snow plowing, and now they've run through a lot of those funds, and they're going to be in trouble. If we get a lot more snow, we may have to appropriate some money through funding in some source to help out counties with snow
removal. That takes care of that $1 billion.
Well, maybe it does. I don't know.
Good morning. You're online with the Senator.
Yeah. About this budget surplus, or projected budget surplus, how much of it is a one-time, and how much of it is over a long-term?
Well, that's a good question. When we had the revenue estimating conference, they haven't really said this is going to be continuing and ongoing. So if it's continuing and ongoing and the Michigan economy is producing revenue at a point that we could do some, you know, count on it, maybe we'd do some things different. But we're being cautious and conservative and saying, look, maybe it's still only one-time money. Let's do the things that we need to do. We're investing in our armory, some of the stuff that we didn't do over the last 10 or so years in budgets, some of the deferred maintenance that we've set aside, just a number of those things that we need to do to make sure our things that we support stay whole. And we're trying to do a bunch of those things and look at it with as one time instead of ongoing until we get a sense that the revenue is and the economy is going to chug at a point that continues to have it go ongoing.
Well, as you painted it, it was approximately about a 1% or a 1.5% surplus in your characterization, which to me would seem this is not the time where you would say, let's give some money back to the citizens. You have that deferred maintenance. We know that we've got a serious problem with the road commissions and their snow removal costs across the state. It would just seem absurd that Michigan leadership would be thinking a tax cut.
Well, I think there's the overall philosophy that people know best what to do with their money when it's to them is right. But again, with $30 billion of unfunded liabilities into the future, and I mentioned Dave Ramsey before, and I think you most people understand that. When you're paying off debt, you increase the cash that you have available to do other things with. So that's one of the focuses that we have to do. And then our continuing cost stretching and savings on corrections and other places where we can privatize some of those things and hopefully save some money, and then make sure that we have the other that money available to invest in priorities, education, things like that as well.
Do we have any metrics on privatization?
We're out of time, sir. Thank you, Senator, for being our guest today here on Talk of the Town.
Thank you, Duke. And listeners, very lively today. Thank you very much.
Yes, it was.